Committee on Public Education Appropriation for March 28, 2006, and we will open a work session on the report on adequacy of K-12 education funding as required by Article 8, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution. Do we have a motion to adopt the report?
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move to adopt the report on adequacy of K-12 education funding as required by Article 8, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. We will now go to a discussion because I do believe there are some members that actually want to make a few comments. And so I'm going to just look for hands or whoever wants to start first. Representative Riley.
I'll go first. I read this over very carefully, and I believe it reflects most of what I feel about the issue. I would say it's clear that the funding for K-12 is inadequate and that we need to move to do a better job in the future, but I'm prepared to vote yes on this today. Thank you.
Representative Morgan, I know that sometimes being on the phone in a committee meeting is a difficult thing to do. It's hard to raise your hand. Do you have any statement that you'd like to make?
I think that just that having been a part of this process, and this is the third iteration of the ballot measure one report that I've been involved in, that this is a process of compromising on the contents of the report, because obviously there are some very divergent opinions about the relevance of the quality education model to the school funding debate, and also the relevance of the model to attainments of standards by students in the state of Oregon. And I would like to commend the co-chairs of the committee for putting a report out there that I think does quite well outline the challenges and the successes of the K-12 system in the state of Oregon. And I know that this report is being introduced into a highly political charged atmosphere, both in the legislative arena and the general political arena, and now moving into the courts. And I would hope that the information that's been put forth here has a broad enough base and is well researched and very factual information to help the citizens of Oregon understand the challenges that we face, not only with K-12 funding and education funding in general, but also the funding of the other parts of the state budget that depend on general funds to provide human services to the citizens of the state and public safety services to the citizens of the state. I am prepared to vote yes for this.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Who would like to be next?
Mr. Chair, I can go next, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I actually have some...
Senator Walker.
Thank you. I actually have some questions. I'm not ready to sign off on this report yet. I just have a couple of comments and questions and maybe some stylistic suggestions. First of all, on page 9, we talk about federal mandates and the IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. That, I believe, needs a teensy bit more explanation, if I could suggest that. And the reason is because most people, first of all, don't know when IDEA was passed or when it was reauthorized or what it all meant. And Congress has failed to live up to its end of the bargain. And quite frankly, that has impacted our school districts pretty substantially, especially as we've seen an increase in students with disabilities. And I just simply wanted a reference there, the passage of the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which was first passed in 1979 as the Education of All Handicapped Children Act, and then it was recently reauthorized in 2004. It was renamed IDEA in 1997. So we've been fighting with the federal government for quite some time about adequately funding the states for disabled children, and I just think we need to make sure that's very clear in this report. And I don't know if anyone else agrees with me, but I wanted to put that on the record. And do you want me to go to my next comment? Or?
Yes.
Okay, great. On the next page, on page 10, this is just a stylistic issue. I think there needs to be a paragraph. Mr. Keller, when you start in the discussion about NCLB, just because I was reading it, I thought we were still talking about IDEA. So when you start the sentence that says the cost of implementing provisions of the NCLB, I just think that should be another paragraph.
Excuse me, Senator Walker, could you again say where you are in the report when you're talking about NCLB?
Okay, I thought I did, Susan, but it's on page 10.
Okay.
It's at the top of page 10. I just think there needs to be a paragraph that separates that discussion about IDEA from NCLB, just to make it easier to read. That's just my stylistic look at it.
So you're saying a line of white space in there?
Uh-huh, that's all. I mean, the NCLB's got a lot of lines of white spaces, but if we just want to put one in between those two paragraphs so that we know that we're now talking about NCLB.
Is it not NCLB in the context of the IDEA discussion?
It's actually the second part of that, that heading.
Okay.
So a line in there is not a problem.
Gotcha.
Okay. And... yeah, down in the next paragraph also, when you're talking about PERS, that third line, it's kind of empty. You could probably bring up the bottom line. I'm sorry. That's
oh, I see. But, yeah.
You see what I mean? That's my editing stuff. So that's not really anything of substance. This is stylistic. But now I've got something of substance to talk about. On that same page, on page 10, if you go down to health care, it says in that paragraph that premiums for job-related health benefits rose 9.2% and was the first year of single-digit increases since 2000. Well, I want to know why there are single-digit increases there. I want to know if school districts had to dip into reserves because everyone else has seen huge increases in health care costs, and I don't know why they're being held to 9.2%. So I don't know if anyone's interested in putting that in the report, or I would just like to see the research that went behind that statement.
Senator Walker, I believe that's the actual numbers that we were able to obtain. In terms of the state, I think they are actually experiencing lower, for state employees, they are experiencing lower health care rates than we had originally anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
So there seems to be a slight downturn in the rates, I think, across the board. We don't know how long it will last. Nobody expects it to last very long, to be honest.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for that. I just want to be clear, and I wanted to know if any of the districts had to dip into their reserves to keep that cost low. So that was my concern about that. And I think that's appropriate under transportation costs to make sure we include that information about increased fuel costs. And I don't know if the school buses can run on biodiesel or not. And biodiesel is actually not, it hasn't really reached a break-even point, but I think we should look at that in the future to help keep costs down. Other than that, I'm fine with this report. I just still want to indicate that the QEM, the quality education model, is law. It is the state of the law in the state of Oregon, and we are not funding education in Oregon at the level as required by the QEM. And NCLB, No Child Left Behind, for those of you out in the audience who don't know what that is, requires us to get to 99% benchmarks, and we can't even get to 90% if we're not even meeting the QEM. So I have a concern that we're Congress and ourselves are setting up our education system for failure because we're not paying attention to this. So, you know, the report is what it is. Hopefully it becomes meaningful to people given the outside influences that are taking place right now. And that's kind of how I feel about it. And, Mr. Chair, I do hope that you introduce into the record the notations that we have here, the memo from Oregon Education Association about their comments, because I think their comments are appropriately taken as well. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Any additional comments? Senator Starr.
I had not expected to comment, but I feel that the report is pretty thorough. I like the way it's been put together, and will be supporting it. The comments that Senator Walker has made are appropriate, I think. Certainly the changing the paragraph and that sort of thing doesn't change the report at all. I guess my concern is that we are not accomplishing our goal of improving education outcomes for our children, and that is not only a part of the funding problem, but it's a part of doing the same thing and expecting different outcomes. And I'm going to be supporting this report, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. I'll defer to you, Senator.
Okay.
Before I make my comments.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This process has probably taken a little bit longer than we originally anticipated, but I think it has taken longer for good reason. And that is actually we have worked out a number of issues. We had a fairly long public hearing on this. We've received numerous comments, both from people in the committee and people outside of the committee. We've tried to look at those comments and see how they might affect some of the decisions we make within this report. I've been pretty adamant since the very beginning that I view this report as an obligation of the legislature, and because I view obligations very seriously, I felt we had a clear obligation to comply with the Constitution and the statute as closely as we possibly could. And that's why I pushed that we actually try to answer directly some of the questions that are posed in statute about our education appropriation and about its adequacy. I think we have done that. I think also if Oregonians look at this report, they will see a lot of items that will aid them in their debate about the adequacy of school funding. I don't believe that our discussion in committee, our discussion with other stakeholders in the education community, is any different than the discussion out there in the public. There is broad disagreement about what the level of adequate funding should be. There is broad disagreement about whether or not more funding actually equals higher achievement. There is clearly a belief by some members of this committee, including myself, that we have underfunded public education in this state, not only at the K through 12 level, but at community colleges and higher ed, and including pre-K. But what we have tried mostly to do in this report is be as direct as we possibly can, to cite as many sources as we possibly could. Most of the information in this report can clearly be found in other documents. Some people have speculated that the contents of this report might impact a pending lawsuit. I do not believe that is the case. Every document that we have considered putting in this report, every document that we have put in this report, are all matters of public record. They're obtainable by anyone. Clearly, I believe that the lawsuit has some potential of prevailing. I do believe that there is an issue out there in terms of our adequacy. I do believe that the legislature could do better than it has done. I actually do believe that the legislature will do better than it has done in coming bienniums. We've been through a very difficult time in Oregon's economy. Many Oregon families have been impacted. Our economy has started to recover. With that recovery, our revenues have started to increase. If we make wise decisions, we can make wise investments in our education system and clearly improve it. And I believe that everybody on this committee cares about Oregon school children and cares about having a quality education system in this state. And with that, I will turn it over to my co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members, and guests. I do agree that this report is compiled with data that is very specific very objective. That was our goal. I think it was our mutual goal to provide information that would give us a snapshot of where we are based upon the facts, and I do believe that we have done that. We had a very specific requirement in the statute that asked us to address certain questions. I believe that we have done that, and therefore we have met the statutory requirements of our charge. Beyond that, and going into discussion of our personal views, philosophies as to adequacy is not the purview of this report, in my opinion. I believe that based on some of the language that we seem to be differing somewhat over, when we talk about mandates, not a mandate, requirements, law, I think it's important to recall that the language does instruct us that we are to review, make a report upon the determination of the Quality Education Commission that we are sufficiently meeting the quality goals. It is clear that we have answered no. From the beginning, the answer has been no. There has been a significant gap from the very inception of the endeavor to have that conversation. We did hear testimony, I would remind my colleagues, from the Department of Education that there are three methods the Quality Education Commission could look at, methods, models, to determine, to make some determinations on educating. And one of those is best practices, which is what the Quality Education Commission has utilized. Another is expert. And another is empirical, based on experience or observation rather than theory or principle. The report does reflect that we are having some successes in certain areas based on experience and observation. That is not the model that this, or the method that the quality education in the model adopts. It does use recommendations, and we have thoroughly set forth those things in this report. I think that it's important for us to remember as we go forward in our mutual and collaborative discussions and perhaps moving into the next legislative session that, once again, these are untested methods and models, and there is nothing that really says that these will specifically be the outcomes. And further would remind each of us that there is a lack of statutory requirement that school districts would necessarily need to spend their funds as recommended by the commission through the quality education model. I am prepared to adopt this report with perhaps the minor exception of making a paragraph between the discussion on the IDEA and the NCLB. I would not be inclined to have an expansion of discussions in any of the areas that the Senator Walker did bring forward as far as determining an expanded discussion on health care costs and transportation. Okay. Senator?
Madam Co-Chair, could I ask that if you would, you said that you don't have an objection to basically breaking those paragraphs apart so it is distinct. Do you have any objection to simply noting the date of authorization and reauthorization of IDEA? That's a fairly, just so that when people read the report, they know that it isn't something new that Congress has dreamed up.
As far as inserting the dates of reauthorization, I don't have objection. We could historically, I guess, go back into NCLB, that it would begin in 1965 and is reauthorized every 6 years and named something else by whoever happens to be president, but I'm not sure that we need to have that type of historical development.
Okay. But you have no objection?
I would not have an objection.
Well, and Mr. Co-Chair and Madam Co-Chair, I just want to be clear about what date we're putting in there because, you know, it was reauthorized in 2004. First of all, it was titled something else in 75. It was renamed IDEA in 1990, and enacted in 1997 and then reauthorized in 2004. So I just want to know what date we're going to put in there.
Well, Senator Walker, members of the committee, I think it might be, unless I see some movement in the audience that says, I almost view it like the name has been changed. It's almost, I'm going to go to an entirely different area of public policy. Mm-hmm. But about every 6 years, the federal government reauthorizes the Surface Transportation Act, and they always give it some new name mm-hmm. every time they reauthorize it. I would believe that since the time, although it has changed in its requirements, since the time that this has been originally authorized, it was probably to address the needs of students that had particular needs, special needs. And I don't think there's probably been any change in its general direction. There's probably, obviously, has been change in its content. And there was a big debate in its last reauthorization.
Yes, there was.
And so I think just saying that, I don't think it's that, I think it would be just relatively clear just to say first authorized in 1975. The intent mm-hmm. that you're trying to do here is to let the casual reader of this know that this is not just some new creation that the federal government has put out on the table.
I would agree, Mr. Chair. That was my intent. I want folks to understand who don't know all of the details about education funding to just pick up this document and be able to have a fairly good understanding of how we fund education in this state, and that will tell us that in 1975 even Congress recognized that it had an obligation to help the states fund children with disabilities in our education system. So I'm happy if you would put that in there.
Are there any
the language of first authorized in 1975, just begin that paragraph
yeah.
with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would have no objection.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other objections from the committee?
The
one thing I would actually, for the record, point out is that we have received written mm-hmm. testimony from Lori Wimmer Whalen of the OEA Governmental Affairs, and asked that be entered into the official record of this committee's consideration. And I believe all committee members have had it. Time to read it, and it is actually public information at this point and is part of the committee record. Any additional discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, Ms. Wimmer Whalen did ask us to make two changes, and I'm assuming that those changes are not going forward. And one of her points is also somewhat stylistic in that she wanted us to include the actual amount that we are not funding the QEM. We don't list an actual amount.
I think actually, in essence, we do, because it obviously there are different portions. You have the one bar graph that shows you what the growing discrepancy is between the legislature's mm-hmm. appropriation and the QEM. And then I believe in one of the paragraphs we actually mentioned the specific amount of the QEM. On page 5, about the middle of the page, QEM would cost $7.035 billion. Our current appropriation is $5.240 billion. With the June forecast, we do anticipate that would be increased to $5.263 billion.
I think what she was just simply asking is that we stated in a sentence that would therefore be a difference of or something like that.
Yeah.
But
well, I think we have identified the difference in the graph. The graph, I think, is very visual in terms of its depiction. Any additional comment? Any objection to the adoption of the report? Representative Morgan, are you? I cannot see you, so I have to actually get a... As amended. Representative Morgan?
Uh-oh.
Can we try to see it? Okay. We make it a little bit. We will stand at ease for a second.
Is here?
Yeah. Hi. We've made some slight technical adjustments. We hear no objections. The report of adequacy of the Keith Senator Walker.
I'm sorry. There was one comment that I wanted to make, and it was just simply on page 5 where we talk about the college overview. You know, I thought that was good what we did, but we said the growth rate's only 1%. I just want people to be aware of that. That's a pretty flat growth rate, and it's likely because the cost of tuition is getting out of reach, and there's just not enough money for these kids to go to school. So I'm okay. Just making that comment.
Okay. With that, without objection,
yes.
The report on adequacy of K-12 education funding is adopted. Is there anything else for the good of the business of this committee? Hearing nothing else for the good of the business of this committee, we are adjourned.
Thank you.